Good evening, and welcome to tonight's monthly teleconference entitled SSDI, Starting and Navigating the Process. All lines are currently in a listen-only mode. During the presentation, we will conduct several question-and-answer sessions. If you would like to ask a question, please press 1-4. Please try to ask questions that are general in nature and might appeal to the larger group. Questions will be taken the order they are received. I would now like to turn the conference over to Ms. Piper Reynolds, Senior Manager of Outreach and Education for the National MS Society Greater Northwest Chapter. Piper, you may begin.
Thank you, and thank you all so much for registering for our August monthly teleconference, SSDI, Starting and Navigating the Process. We're so very pleased to have you all on the line with us this evening. The Greater Northwest Chapter's monthly teleconferences are one of the many free and helpful chapter programs and services available to people living with MS. From support groups to care management, financial assistance to political advocacy, we are here to help and partner with you. Whether you're a person living with MS, a friend or caregiver, the National MS Society is here to connect you to the information and resources you need. Contact us anytime by dialing 1-800-344-4867 and press option 1. Or you can always visit us online at www.msnorthwest.org. This evening, we will be discussing Social Security Disability Insurance, also known as SSDI. SSDI is a monthly benefit for people who have worked in the past and paid Social Security taxes, but have been unable to work for a year or more because of their disabilities. We're joined this evening by two leading experts in the field of SSDI and MS, Peter McGee and Rebecca Pursley. Peter is an attorney of the firm Douglas Drackler and McGee and has 30 years of experience in this field. Peter specializes in representing applicants who have been denied their claim for Social Security and SSI disability benefits. Rebecca is a former school teacher living with MS who successfully won the SSDI award on the first try and has spoken on this topic for more than 10 years. Following this evening's teleconference, you will receive a program evaluation by email, which we urge you to please complete, as your feedback and ideas are very important to us. Within that email, you will receive information about our upcoming teleconferences and other chapter programs and services available to you. On that note, I would like to thank you again for being on the call this evening and would like to hand it off to Rebecca and Peter. You two may begin.
All right. Well, I'm Peter McKee. It's actually M-C-K-E-E. I'm a lawyer in Seattle, and I and Rebecca have done a bunch of presentations over the last 10, 15 years regarding Social Security and MS, and it's great to have this opportunity to do this presentation. I'm going to talk for about 20 minutes, and then we will take about 5-10 minutes of questions with the operator's assistance, and then around about 7 o'clock Washington State time, we will have Rebecca begin her part. So let me just start by giving you a little background about who I am, only because you need to decide if you want to believe what I have to say. It's always important to know who's talking. I've been representing disabled clients for the last 33 years, first as a paralegal, then as a law student, then as a lawyer with legal services, then in private practice. I'm in, with a law firm in Seattle. And you will be getting, anyone who wants it, the written materials that Rebecca and I have prepared. And on my materials, my contact information is there. So I have been representing people for all this time, and I only represent people who have been denied benefits. So I get, some would say, a fairly jaded perspective on things. And it certainly is true that not everyone who applies gets denied. But usually people who are interested in this seminar are interested because they want to know what do they do if they are denied or what do they do now that they have been denied. If they apply and have been approved, they probably aren't listening into this seminar. So I think my perspective is a useful one only because I've had a lot of experience in trying to deal with denials of benefits. But before you can deal with denials of benefits, you've got to know what the program is. You've got to know what the benefits are. You have to know what the standard disability is. And so I want to cover all of that, and then I want to cover the process of applying, and then I'll be taking questions. What Rebecca and I are doing now in about 20 minutes each is what we normally do in at least an hour. So we're going to run right through this. First off, you need to understand that if you are looking at Social Security disability benefits, there are two programs that are frequently described as Social Security disability. One is called SSI, that's Supplemental Security Income. That is a disability program run by the Social Security Administration, which is a program which requires you to prove that you're disabled and that you have little or no income or resources. It is more like a public assistance program. With that comes a medical coverage program called Medicaid. The other program, known as Social Security Disability, or SSDI, is Social Security Disability Insurance. It is more like an insurance policy. You have to be disabled, but then you have to have bought the insurance. The way you buy the insurance is by working and having FICA taken out of your paycheck. So if you have worked and paid into the system, you might be eligible for Social Security Disability Insurance. What you have to know is that if you are applying for Social Security Disability Insurance, you have to show that from the date you became disabled, you can look back 5 out of the last 10 years and show that you worked. So in the past 10 years, from the date you became disabled, you have to show that you worked and paid into the system 5 out of those last 10 years. If you didn't work 5 out of the last 10 years prior to the onset of your disability, then you will not have the coverage. You didn't buy enough insurance, in other words. So how much you get on Social Security disability, it depends upon how long you've worked, how much you've earned, how much you've paid in. It is almost impossible for me to tell you how much you will get on Social Security, but there is a way that you can generally find out. Social Security frequently sends out a fact sheet to each person saying at the end of each year or every 2 years what your earnings have brought you, what you would get if you became disabled now, what you would get if you retired now, and that is a good start to understand what you might be getting. So with Social Security Disability Insurance, SSDI, disabled plus worked, paid into the system, and if you get Social Security Disability Insurance, you also are eligible for a medical coverage program called Medicare. The problem with Medicare is that it requires you to be receiving benefits for 2 years before they will cover you. So there's a 2-year waiting period for Medicare. SSI, Supplemental Security Income, as I said, disabled plus poor. To be eligible for SSI, you have to be very poor. You can't have more than $2,000 in non-exempt resources. You can't have more than $3,000 if you are a married couple. Your income would determine if you're eligible for SSI. The federal amount of SSI is $674 a month. If you have income coming in, let's say you have your Aunt Tilly is sending you $1,000 a month. Isn't it nice to have Aunt Tilly? But that income may well make you ineligible for SSI because your income is now too high. The other thing about SSI is that you get a Medicaid coverage, and it starts from the time you begin to receive the benefit. There is not a 2-year waiting period. Also, it also provides for coverage for medications, which is very important. You've heard me talk about the two programs, and each of them requires a showing of disability. It's very important, and in my materials, I lay out the exact definition of disability. It is the inability, and I'm quoting from the law, the inability to engage in any substantial gainful activity by reason of any medically determinable impairment, which can be expected to result in death, or which has lasted, or can be expected to last, a continuous period of not less than 12 months. That is the definition of disability, and it's a very odd one. It's not one you find in the dictionary. It's not the one you find if you want to get disability pass for a bus. It is Social Security's own definition. Basically, put quickly, you got to show that you can do no full-time work because of your medical conditions. They can be physical, they can be psychological, they can be a combination. But you got to show that it is only because of your medical conditions that you cannot work. If you can't find a job, if the job, let's say you can't do the job you'd like to do, can't do the job you'd be trained to do, would hire you, that's not enough. You got to show that basically if every job in your area or even beyond your area were offered to you, you got to show what it is about your medical condition that would prevent you from working full-time. It is a full-time work. Now, if you are doing part-time work, that does not absolutely disprove that you can't do, that you are not disabled. But the more you work, the more they will wonder, why can't you just do that job full time? If your income is over $1,000 gross per month, doing even part-time work, they will presume that that proves you are not disabled because you are, in fact, working high enough, at a high enough level. So that is the definition of disability that Social Security uses, and it applies to both programs. In my materials, I have a bunch of information about other aspects of the program, but because of the shortness of our time here, I want to move on and help you understand the process of applying, because that can be equally important in getting your benefits. You can be disabled, but you can lose your benefits because you missed a deadline or whatever, or you didn't fill out the correct paperwork. To apply, and Rebecca will tell you a lot about this, you have to make an application in writing. Social Security is now promoting, and it is working out for some people, to make an application online. If you go to www.ssa.gov, you will see links to applications for Social Security benefits. I think you are not able yet to apply for SSI online, but it is a very helpful website. In any event, whether you're applying in paper or whether you're applying online, you do have to apply. And what will happen is you're going to be asked dozens and dozens and dozens of questions through many papers and many forms. And what I can tell you is if you don't tell Social Security about the problems you're facing in graphically and honest ways, then they won't know about it, and they can't find you disabled because of the problems you have if they don't know about it. So I urge you to be bluntly and graphically honest about all aspects of the problems that affect your ability to work. Just because you have a diagnosis of one thing or another doesn't mean you're disabled. Social Security says we start with a diagnosis. Then we need to know about how that diagnosed condition limits you. That is the important thing. When you fill out all the paperwork, the papers go to a group called the Disability Determination Service. They are usually in every state a group of state employees contracted by the Social Security Administration to evaluate all these claims that are being filed. They do not see the person who's applying. They look at the paperwork. Then you can understand that if you haven't listed problems or if you haven't listed doctors or if you haven't listed the medications or the other things that are affecting you, then they won't know about it, they won't look them up, and they won't get them, and they can't then find you disabled because they're missing information sometimes. Rebecca will describe for you how in the ideal world it would be perfect if you could gather all your medical records and provide them to Social Security. That usually doesn't happen because we don't live in an ideal world, but Social Security is obligated to try to go out and get your records. The only thing I can say is it would be pretty obvious that between the person who's applying for benefits and the agency that is being asked to pay benefits, probably the individual has the greater incentive to try to track down the tough records that the doctor has lost or hasn't gotten around to sending. So if you have an ability to get your records, that would be important. Once you apply, the DDS, these people who evaluate the claim, look at all the records, and they make a decision. They will then send out a decision to the person. Critical to understand is from the date of that decision, you have 60 days to file any appeal. From here on out, I'm going to assume that the person that we're talking about has been denied. What do you do? Well before the 60 days, you must file in writing an appeal, and the appeal you file at this stage is called a request for reconsideration. It is available also online, but you have to file it, and again, you'll be asked a series of questions. They are going to look a lot like the ones you filled out before, but if you fill them out once, fill them out again and provide whatever updated information you may have. Maybe it's only been a couple months, but you might have been to see another doctor. You might be taking different medications. Your symptoms might have changed. Don't get frustrated and just toss it, because Social Security would then not have to deal with your appeal. Continue on. Don't let them wear you down is what I would say. Social Security will look at your reconsideration request and all the updated information. If they turn you down then, you have to request a hearing if you want to appeal. The appeal must, again, be filed within 60 days. And this stage, you will be requesting a hearing. The hearings are held before what are called administrative law judges around the country. Each area has administrative law judges and hearing offices, which are now called Offices of Disability Adjudication and Review, euphemistically known as ODAR. And those offices have administrative law judges who do nothing but listen to cases on appeals of denials of Social Security and SSI benefits. If you have not obtained a legal representative before this time, you want to get a lawyer who has had experience in representing people before these agencies, this agency, well before the hearing. Don't wait until 2 days before the hearing or 3 weeks before the hearing. It can take a long time to get ready for these cases, and I urge you to contact a lawyer as soon as possible. If you don't know of lawyers in your area, there is a nationwide organization called NOSCR, N-O-S-S-C-R. I think they are www.noscr.org, and they have a clearinghouse for lawyers around the country. But usually your local bar association can also give you referrals. The hearings are very important. The judge, this will be the first time that you are eyeball to eyeball with someone who will be evaluating your case and deciding, are you disabled? You don't want to go into these hearings by yourself. Though they may seem like informal gatherings, they aren't. There are rules and regulations they are applying that you won't know anything about. There may be experts, medical experts, who are going to look at your records and tell their opinion of them. And you would be surprised if your doctor said that you have obvious signs of MS and the medical expert attending says, well, I'm not sure that that's a good diagnosis. Your doctor seems to think it is, but here is this person who's quickly reviewed your file and said they have doubts. They may have a vocational expert, someone who is going to provide information about what a person, what kind of job a person can do if they have certain limitations. You're never going to know what that person is going to say until they say it right in the middle of the hearing. So that's one of my toughest jobs at a hearing, is to respond to vocational experts who start talking about, well, I think a person can be an artificial flower stem wrapper. And that actually was once said in a case of mine. The judge will issue a written decision anywhere from a week to 2 months after the hearing. If you lose at that level, you have a right to appeal it to what's called the Appeals Council, which is in Falls Church, Virginia. It is a paper review. And if you lose there, you can go into federal court. But there is also one thing I can tell you. From the time you request a hearing, after you've been turned down twice, to the time of a hearing, at least in the Seattle area, and it seems to be generally true around the country, it is taking about a year to a year and a half to have the hearing, to meet the judge. So if you can win it earlier, then you want to win it earlier. If you have the hearing, you definitely want to win it there, because the chances of winning go way down. So I guess what I can say before we take some questions is that don't give up. A lot of people have been denied benefits, and ultimately they didn't get their benefits because they gave up. Now, it's understandable. It can be a very frustrating process. But what I can say is that even if you've been turned down twice, at the hearing level, you have something like a 65 to 70%, 67% in the Seattle area, a chance of winning your benefits, even if you've been turned down twice. So that is a quick thumbnail sketch of this whole process. And what we're going to do now is I can take about 10 minutes of questions, after which in about 10 minutes, Rebecca will then step in and tell you a whole lot more about the application process. So, operator, I'm happy to take some questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. Now, if your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. If you are using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before entering your request. Our first question comes from the line of Izzy in Cleveland, Ohio.
Hello.
I'm now open.
Hello.
Hello. When we did the application on the phone, they didn't ask any questions about the medical condition. They just asked the standard regular questions. Why is that? Birthday, regular things.
Yeah. Were you applying for disability benefits?
Yes. My wife
has. I have no idea why they wouldn't ask about that. But you definitely, when you apply on the phone, they should send you a set of papers to complete. So if that was never asked, I couldn't, for the life of me, explain that. And I would either go to your local Social Security office, or I would go online and get the application form, because that does ask for information like all that I've described.
At the end of the conversation, my wife said, like, you could ask me anything about my problem, and she said, you have 2 minutes, say whatever you want. So my wife spoke for as many minutes as the lady let her, and we thought she was writing it down. But when we got a summary of the report, there was nothing there.
Then what you do is you augment it. And I would definitely, if you have an ability to go online and get the application form or go to your local Social Security office. You have unlimited powers to write whatever you want, but they missed a whole lot of questions, so I've never heard of anything like that before.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your question.
Our next question comes from Wendy in Yakima. Your line is now open.
Hello, Yakima.
Yes, this is Ron. I just had a question about my wife, Wendy. I noticed you said that if you can't do full-time work, and she's been working 3 days and been accommodated her business for the last 10 years, but she's barely able to do the 3 days, if she decides that she can't do it anymore, does she still have to wait for a year without income to apply, or since she automatically fits your definition of not doing full-time work now, could she apply right away?
All right, and I'm glad you brought it up. You do not have to wait for a year to apply. You simply have to show that you have been or will be expected to be disabled for a year. So if you get hit by a car today and everyone knows you're going to be disabled for a year, you don't have to wait for a year to prove that. You just have to show that you will be disabled. So if she cannot do full-time work and if her earnings are not very high now, she could, in theory, apply right now. But if her earnings are over $700-$800, it would be hard to convince over $1,000. It would be hard to convince Social Security that she is totally disabled. So, whenever she feels she cannot do full-time work and her earnings are below about $1,000, she should apply then. But be aware that if she's working, they're going to wonder, well, is it because she can't work more or because she chooses not to work? But you do not have to wait a year to apply.
Okay, one quick follow-up too. If her business like got bought out or, you know, just quit, could she still get unemployment while she's applying, or is that non-exclusive?
That's sort of beyond my scope. I'm sorry. I don't want to give you the wrong answer.
Okay.
Just talking about Social Security disability, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You bet.
Our next question comes from the line of Jennifer in Priest River. Your line is now open.
Hi. The guy just asked the same question that I wanted to ask.
All right. And that was
question.
How long you have to wait?
Yes, because I was just diagnosed in 2010, but I know I've had it before then, but I'm a certified nurse's aide, and it's just getting harder and harder for me to work. And I work 4 days a week right now. But
right. Well, ultimately, you have to make a judgment call. Has your condition gotten to the point that you cannot do full-time substantial gainful activity? And if you feel you have reached that, then you can apply for disability. You've got to prove that that's the way it is. And the start, of course, as I said, is what is the diagnosis? But being diagnosed doesn't mean being disabled by their standard. They will say, yes, you've been diagnosed. Now tell us about how that condition is preventing you from being able to do full-time work. That's what the key is.
Yeah, and I make over, you know, is it $1,000 a month?
Roughly $1,000 a month gross they presume anyone earning over $1,000 per month gross is doing substantial gainful activity, even though it may be part-time.
Okay.
So you're in a rock and a hard place. When do you stop trying?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't have easy answers for that. You need to be talking to your doctors, your family, your coworkers to make that judgment call.
Yeah, does it depend on, because I talked to the doctor and she said, well, if you make less, then they will pay you less for Social Security.
Well, no. Well, long-term that may be true, but if you a short-term reduction of earnings is not going to have a significant impact on your month on what benefits you would otherwise be eligible for. So what I can tell you is you've got to make the judgment call. Have you reached the point of the definition of disability, the inability to do any substantial gainful activity because of your condition on a full-time basis. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your question.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Our next question comes from the line of Dorothy in Priest River. Your line is now open.
Hi, this might sound really stupid, but how many times can you be turned down before you just, they don't let you apply again?
The answer is there is no such number, but if you apply, get turned down, do not appeal, it's over and done with, then a year later you apply and they ask you, well, tell me, what's different from the last time we looked at this? And you say, absolutely nothing is different. Then they will turn you down again. You don't get to do the same thing over and over again with no new information.
But yeah, my last turn down was in July of 2006, and it said final.
A lot has changed. So I would urge you to reapply if you feel that you are disabled, and assume they know nothing about what you told them before. You are making a whole new claim, and don't give up. If they turn you down, don't just quit. Keep on fighting.
Okay, and here's an... Okay, I'll put that down. So your personal opinion of the Social Security disability lawyers on TV, what do you think about them? Oh, no, this
not,
is ought to be good.
I am not going to answer that one.
don't want to say lawsuit, huh?
No. Here's what I'll say. If I were in a person's shoes, I would want my lawyer to be local so that I could go and talk to them, so that the lawyer would know the local judges, so they aren't just flying in from some unknown location trying to identify the client as they walk into the hearing room and then leaving. So I personally would want a lawyer who knows the local judges, who knows the local doctors. That's what I can say.
Well, I had a local lawyer go with me to the law judge hearing thing in, well, that was actually 2005 at the end, and then 2006 was the final turn down, final nice big words.
Yep.
So enough time's gone by, I can take another run at him?
Well
you stumble, gotta explain, actually.
You got to explain what has changed since then, medically, and what limits you now. So I'm going to take one more call, and then I'm going to pass it on to Rebecca.
Well, thank you.
You bet.
Our next question comes from the line of Michelle in Silverdale. Your line is now open.
Oh, thank you. Hi. I've had MS for 20-some years, and in 1997, I had my daughter, and I applied for disability at that time, and I was denied. And being young enough, I never pursued it, but now I need some assistance. And I want to know, after I haven't worked for 13 years, can I apply again?
You can apply, but you are going to have to show that you are disabled, and you will have to show, you know, you have to pick a date. What date do you believe you were no longer able to do any kind of full-time work? If from that date you look back, you have not worked and paid into the system, you will not be eligible for Social Security if you did not work 5 out of the 10 years prior to that date. And it sounds like if you said today I'm disabled, well, and today is the day I became disabled, you haven't worked in 13 years, so your insurance, in essence, has lapsed. You might be eligible for SSI if your income is very low and you have no resources. But if you have a savings account, if you have investments, if your spouse earns a reasonable income, you may be ineligible financially. So I can't answer it definitely, but if you have little or no work history recently, then you'd have to try to prove you were disabled way back when to get Social Security disability. SSI will be a financial issue.
Okay, yeah, the financial issue is not a problem, but what I'm wondering is about 3 years ago, I would fall and my MS just went through the roof.
You got to get the medical records that show that. I can't answer, you know, when in your particular case would the cutoff date be, but go and apply and see what they have to say.
Okay.
All right, good luck.
Okay, so I just called. Thank you very much.
You bet. So I'm going to now sign off, and Rebecca is going to take it from here. You there,
All
Rebecca?
Right. I am here. Thanks.
All right.
See you soon.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Good evening, everybody. I was introduced earlier, but I'll just remind you, I was a career teacher before MS sidelined me in 1993, and I applied for and won benefits at the initial level in record time. Ta-da! 1 month. So I've been sharing my tips for success and helping other folks apply for SSDI ever since, most of the time with Peter. And tonight's presentation is way too brief to tell you everything you need to know about the process. Matter of fact, I think I'll call this session SSDI Light. So I'll just give you some highlights, and you'll have to follow up with more research on your own. I'll be talking about a book. The title is SSDI Tutor, that Piper from the National MS Society will be sending to you just for that purpose. I wrote the book, and I update it regularly so I can accommodate all the changes that SSA throws at us in the forms in the process. So if you're not planning to apply soon, you can contact me for a current copy when you do decide to apply. And all of the things I'm going to touch on tonight are explained fully in the book. And if you look at it and you still have questions, you can give me a call or send me an email. My contact information is cleverly written all over it. So tonight I'm going to share with you the goal of a successful application, when to file, different ways you can file, the steps of a complete application, how SSA evaluates it, why you should take the process seriously, and my top tips for success. Phew! Here we go. Your goal is to convince Social Security that you are no longer able to perform any job for 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year. You can write that down. It's important. This process is administrative technically, but it certainly feels adversarial. So you need to proceed as if you are preparing evidence for a legal case. And Peter touched on when to file, so I'm just going to add a few more things. You should file as soon as you stop working full time. And there's a whole set of decisions for you to make here that I'm not going to touch on. But when you've stopped working full-time and you finished a draft of your application document and gathered all the other necessary papers and things to support your application. Another time to file is when your private insurer insists. That's what happened to me. And then you also need to file while you're still eligible, like the lady who's asked the question previously. There are several ways to accomplish filing a claim. You can apply online, you can apply in person at the field office, or you can do so over the phone. And each one of those has its advantages and its drawbacks. And you can read the chapter in the tutor called Which Way Should I Go for all the details of each process. You can apply on your own, here's another choice for you, or you can hire a representative like me to help you or Peter. There are also SSDI advocates available at no charge through the National MS Society for the people who are in the greater Washington chapter area. So when my long-term disability carrier commanded me to apply for Social Security disability, I called an attorney for help. I thought, legal document, why not? And the attorney told me, yeah, it's easy. Just fill out the form, turn it in, and call me back when you get denied. I hear you gasp. I know. But most attorneys will not take initial claims because they're only paid a maximum of 25% of any back award you receive. And that's something you need to keep in mind if you intend to hire one of the big boys like Bender & Bender or Alsup. Although they do have excellent success rates, you will likely not win your benefit at the initial level because they're paid like attorneys, a percentage of any back award. Hence, there's no incentive for them to win early. Now, if you're already covered by long-term disability benefits, it may not matter to you if this process drags on for years. But if you're trying to survive on your savings, then that's a definite reason to put together the strongest possible initial claim yourself or find a representative who shares that goal. There are lots of steps in a complete application. Some things you should do before you attempt to fill out any form, like document your symptoms, collect job-related evidence like accommodation requests, employee reviews, attendance records, and you should also request your medical records. And which ones to request and why is explained in the tutor again. An application also includes collecting a lot of, I call it administrivia, like names, titles, dates, clinic numbers, addresses, phone numbers, zip codes, employment dates, wage amounts, and such that you all not only have to collect but verify. If you leave a space blank, it's a reason to be denied. It also slows down your adjudicator if he has to figure out if that's relevant data that's missing. So write not applicable or NA instead of leaving a space blank. Also, if you copy phone numbers from the yellow pages for the hospital or a doctor, that is not acceptable. Consider that the disability examiner just simply doesn't have time to call a general hospital information line or slog through voicemail options, and he just might bail on a critical piece of medical evidence for your claim. There are several forms that are part of an initial claim. There is an application. There is a disability report. There is a function report. There is a work history report, and there may be others as well. The forms are not friendly. It's hard to tell the instructions on the application and disability report from the instructions of a tax form. So you can find the questions for each of the reports, not the actual forms, and my tips for filling them out in the SSDI tutor. And also how much and what kind and how to submit all of the additional documentation that you gather up is also explained in the book. You can find samples of the actual forms online at Social Security's website, but they're not the easiest to find and print off. It can be done, but it's not easy. So in addition to completing and submitting all this paperwork, you're also going to need to make phone calls to follow up on your claim. You might even be asked to appear at a consultative examination. What that is, and scripts for following up your claim, and a timeline for all of the steps I just mentioned are, guess what, in the tutor. So how do they evaluate it? Cases are won based on the limitations from your symptoms and not just the symptoms alone. Your application needs to focus on what limits your ability to be effective in the workplace. You have to be especially clear on any restrictions that you have of standing, sitting, or walking. In other words, tell how long can you stand, how far can you walk, and so on before you have to rest. And then tell how long you need to rest before you can resume walking or standing. Briefly, Social Security is looking not for the least that you can do, but the most. How much can you do? What is your ability to do sustained work activities on a regular and continuing basis? That is, say it with me, 8 to 5, 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year. How much sitting can you do within an 8-hour day? How many cycles of walk, rest, walk can you complete in a work day? Social Security is fond of assigning MS patients, especially, jobs that they call sedentary. A sedentary job, according to Social Security, requires that you're able to stand or walk for 2 hours of an 8-hour day and remain seated for the other 6 hours. Your goal is to prove to Social Security why you can't do that. You need to take this process seriously because it pays to take it seriously. The average benefit is a little over $1,000 a month, $1,110.68. Over the rest of your life, though, that's significant money. Some people get more, some people get less, depending upon your work history. Although disability is a lot harder to get, it pays better than early retirement. If you're of a certain age, Social Security may encourage you to take early retirement, but I really suggest that you take the time and prepare a disability application. If it fails and you don't feel like pursuing it, you can always get the early retirement later. You need to take this process seriously because most initial applications are denied. According to Social Security's own website, they received over 3 million initial disability claims last year. The average time until a determination was made on that initial application was 111 days, and 64% of those applicants were denied. But if you submit a completed set of forms and a variety of evidence that's well organized and summarized, it cuts down the processing time of your claim significantly. Remember my stunning one-month record? Well, the adjudicator said that that quick turnaround was due to my application being complete, thorough, organized, and neat. Being a teacher pays off. If you take the time you need to thoroughly prepare your initial application, you're likely not to have to even deal with a reconsideration or appeal later on. And if you do have to appeal, none of your effort is going to be wasted. All of the information is going to make your attorney's job that much easier. A tip for those of you who have submitted an application and been denied, don't start over or reapply. Call me or Peter McKee's office or some other representative to schedule an appointment, because preparing a reconsideration is very similar to developing an initial application document. You can use the tips in the the SSDI tutor to help you. It's the same standard of disability, and all of my tips and your goal is still the same. So keeping all of that stuff in mind, here are my top tips for helping keep your sanity and managing this process to a successful end. Number one, make this your new job. I know, it stinks, but it is temporary. The job is tough, but it can be done. But you can't do it in a day, a weekend, or even a couple of weeks. Maybe a month if your case is simple. So working on this application is going to be your new job for the next couple of months or three or four. Don't try to do too much, but try to do something every day. Start with something that isn't too much of a challenge, maybe like making a medications list. Give yourself a break. It's unreasonable to expect to finish a section a day or maybe even a question a day. You can't even think of it that way because that's not the way the application is set up. So in terms of pacing, plan to work for a set amount of time each day that you can, and consider yourself successful when you finished working that amount of time, regardless of how many questions you finished. My second tip is to start a daily journal now. Start small, but get started. And there are as many types of journals as there are diets, so just pick one you can live with, and better yet, make up your own. To start, you can keep a calendar by your bed and write good, bad, and okay on each day before you go to sleep. So by the end of the month, you'll be able to report how many of each type of day you experienced in the month. And you can see that the longer you keep the record, the more credible and the more useful your data is going to become. The object here is to quantify your responses. Remember, you're talking to bean counters. SSA is more convinced by a number than a word. If you say, I have an average of 8 migraine headaches a month, it's a much stronger statement than, I have lots of headaches. Another goal is to provide evidence of your invisible symptoms like pain, fatigue, cognitive problems, depression, that will supplement your medical records. The pain, fatigue, and brain fog, and emotional dysfunction just don't lend themselves to objective measurement like symptoms, like visual disorder symptoms. Pain and fatigue aren't easily observable to your physician like a tremor or gait disturbance would be. So starting a daily journal to keep track of all of those things is going to be useful to you. When you're writing, you're going to have to discuss your symptoms in terms of the how bad triad. In other words, frequency, severity, and duration. And in English, that's how often, how bad, and how long. The main issue in a Social Security disability case is your symptoms and the limitations they impose. And in this sense, how bad means how much it interferes with work activity. It does not mean how bad it makes you feel. So you have to discuss your symptom in terms of frequency, severity, duration. Here's an example. I am unable to perform any activities at all 2 days a week due to migraine headaches. They last all day, even with medication, and I just stay in bed. Just keep repeating you're unable to work due to the frequency, severity, and duration of your symptoms, not due to a diagnosis alone. Just having a diagnosis of MS is not enough to get approval of your claim. And you have to discuss all your symptoms, even the embarrassing ones like bowel and bladder or cognitive difficulties. And Social Security will consider the cumulative effect of all your symptoms. My next tip is answer as if you're having a bad day. Another key issue is what activity level can you sustain on a regular and continuing basis? So it's not what you can do on your best days, because you may be able to do some activities for a day or two that would make you appear to be capable of full-time work, like I'm doing this workshop now, but tomorrow I'll be toast, actually burnt toast. So what level of activity can you sustain day after day, week after week, month after month? If you answer as if you're having a bad day, you give a more accurate assessment of what activity level you can maintain. If you were back to work on a continual basis, most likely every day would be a bad day. So this tip will prevent you from overstating your capabilities. Tip number five, document everything. Most of the denials are a result of an applicant not thoroughly stating and documenting their cases. You have to give evidence of your symptoms, evidence of the impact they make on your daily life, and what work modifications you implemented in order to keep working for as long as you did. And the adult disability report is a generic one that is supposed to fit every kind of disability. It's kind of a one-size-fits-no-one form. But MS is a very complex disease, so you're going to need a lot of detail and documentation in order to establish disability. Documentation could mean symptom worksheets and inventories, your diary or symptom log, of course your medical records, also employment and attendance records and performance evaluations. It could be testimonials or affidavits from doctors and therapists, from a letter from a former employer, coworkers, friends, relatives, and etc. What have you or your employer changed in terms of those things, attendance and duties and physical work environment? You have to write all those things down. If you have official attendance reports, you can use those. If you have performance reviews that shows that you are consistently unable to complete assigned tasks on time, use that. If you have a memo in your personal file recording dates that you've blown up at coworkers and customers, use that file too. Remember, you're not displaying a character flaw, you're documenting a symptom. It's important to keep detailed records, and that's my next tip. Phone calls, the number you dialed, the person you spoke with, in what office they are, at what time, notes on your conversation, and any action items. And on the subject of phone calls, just because you talk to somebody at the local field office or the other end of a 1-800 number, that does not mean you got a definitive answer. You need to call SSA as many times as it takes until you get the same answer three times. With regard to letters and notices and forms and such, you need to register all your mail correspondence with Social Security or the Disability Determination Services. Write return receipt requested on the front of the envelope so that the recipient is alerted to that certified mail slip. And get receipts for anything you deliver personally. Tip number seven, make three copies of every document. You give the original one to Social Security. You keep the second in your file to reference when they ask you for new information so that you can make sure that it doesn't contradict what you've already said. And the third copy is a spare that you'll have ready in case your original mysteriously disappears somewhere in the mail or some nameless government office. Tip number eight. Be completely truthful. That means be objective about your situation. Don't overstate your abilities. Remember, you're not writing a resume. Suffering in silence is actually counterproductive to your case. And being straight up about what you can and cannot do doesn't mean you've abandoned a positive mental outlook. It just means you also have a real-world one. Your inability to work is very likely associated with MS fatigue, distractibility, memory impairment, brain haze, any of those things, or others. And Social Security needs to see the real you and not some whiz-bang administrative assistant who's coherent, efficient, and a skilled typist. If it takes you days to complete the form, make sure you tell SSA. If you submit a handwritten remarks page that you prepare without any assistance, the clarity of your handwriting and the way you structure your message is also going to tell a lot about the severity of your cognitive problems and your ability to control your limbs. And engaging a representative or an advocate will also send a message to Social Security that your deficits are so severe that you couldn't even handle this simple, their words, application on your own. Tip number 9, don't try to do this alone. Establish a support network. It really helps to have somebody who to talk to who's been there, done that, has the T-shirt, and can give you some advice. You'll also need some others who may not share your symptoms, but share your disease. And these folks are invaluable for providing encouragement and also emergency chocolate and diversionary movies and tactical support. Be sure to ask others for their input. Ask these significant others to read your application critically. They have a different perspective on your MS and how it affects you. You can ask them to tell you if you're pulling punches or maybe omitting something that could be significant. There are also certain people whose letters of support are important to include with your supporting documents. Your neurologist's letter is critical to your claim. In fact, there's a whole chapter on how to get a good letter from your doctor in the SSDI tutor, and tips for letters from other supporting people are in there too. Be sure to acknowledge all the kinds of help you receive. If you have somebody word process your document for you, tell the SSA so. And my last tip for you is to remember your goal. In the remarks at the end of the disability report, you get to make a statement. Make it count. Tell Social Security that despite all the work on accommodations that you and your employer made, and all the medical treatment you've received, and the therapy protocols you follow, you are no longer able to perform the basic duties and responsibilities of any job because of one or more of these next things I'll list. Because of the severity of one of your symptoms, or the cumulative burden of all of them, because you can't guarantee your reliable attendance and performance at a job, or that your symptoms aren't amenable to rehabilitation. Employers only hire people they can rely on to show up for work consistently, on time, and who are capable of completing basic duties in a timely manner. If your attendance is iffy, and your productivity is compromised by symptoms, you are not, as they say in case law, competitively employable. So, those are 17 of the 142 things you should know about Social Security disability insurance before you apply. And if you can't remember, or if you can only remember one of them, make it this one. Your goal is to convince Social Security that you, hey, I bet you can sing along now, you cannot perform any job for 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year. I want to thank you for listening, and please give me or the SSDI Advocates team at National MS Society a call if you want some help. Also, if you are in the Seattle area and you'd like to attend an SSDI live presentation with Peter McKee and myself that is 2 hours long, complete with cool graphics, banjo music, and food, there is one scheduled for September 24th at Evergreen Hospital, and you can sign up online at the hospital website. And Felix, I can take some questions now.
Absolutely. As a reminder, to register for a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. Now, our first question comes from the line of Jackie in Burien, Washington. Your line is now open.
Yes, my question was, and it was really back for Peter, but for perhaps you can answer it. I have been essentially retired from my job for 3 years because of MS. Is that taken into consideration, how long you've been unable to work when you make these applications, or is it something that you would mention in your comments?
The short answer is no, it is not considered. The trick is to prove that you were disabled when you stopped working. Does that make
okay.
sense?
Okay.
Okay.
And this would be something that I put in the comments section?
You'll probably need some help if you're going to try to prove disability that isn't that is as far back as that, because Social Security really likes to rely on recent medical evidence. And if you're going to try to go back 3 years, that's kind of tricky. So you would need probably a professional advocate to help you make that case for 3 years back. If you just wanted to say that, you know, you're disabled as of this date, that's probably much easier.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Good question.
Our next question comes from the line of Jean in Spokane.
Yes, I'm wondering, how do we get in touch with one of these advocates? How do we find one? Because this has been something that I have wanted for a long time and was never mentioned or offered at my local MS society. So what do I do to find a person that I can consult with as I go through this?
Well, to my knowledge, the Greater Northwest Chapter is the only one that has a team of advocates, and it's because I'm training them. But we are partnering, the Greater Northwest Chapter is partnering with the Greater Inland Chapter, so you might be able to call the Greater Northwest Chapter and see if there is availability for the advocates. So, and I'll also tell you that there is some very good information that the National MS Society publishes and puts forth, and I think Piper's going to be sending that to you along with my information. I kind of tailored mine to accompany theirs, so it's not too much of the same information.
And that tutorial
Try again. Your call is breaking up.
I'm sorry. I was talking over you. We'll automatically get the book with the tutorial.
Yes.
Thank you.
SSDI tutor, former teacher.
Yes,
you know.
Yes. Thank you.
Uh huh.
Our next question comes from the line of David in Moses Lake. Your line is now open.
Hello, Rebecca. Thank you so much for having this. My question was, having a lot of cognitive problems. I was employed full-time till a year ago, and they laid me off. They said it was financial problems, but I know it was. I've had MS problems before. I was diagnosed in 97, but I was the manager of a department, and cognitively, you know, I couldn't maintain my train of thought. I couldn't do presentations. I couldn't, you know, write the memos that I was supposed to do. I mean, how was yours? Was yours all physical, or was it mental too, cognitive?
At the time that I applied, it was purely physical. I was in a wheelchair at the time. I'll tell you that there is an entire chapter in my book about addressing emotional and cognitive symptoms. It's a tougher stretch to prove those invisible things, but there are approaches to it. So read the book, and if you don't get the information that you need, you can contact me, and I'll walk you through it. That's one of the things that the advocates help with. Generally, people with cognitive difficulties have trouble organizing all the information that mm-hmm. is necessary and keeping up logistically with this process. So that's one of the things that the advocates do, is kind of help you navigate it.
Okay, the cognitive is also, I have physical problems too. I'm not
sure.
as bad in a wheelchair or something. I'm still able to walk, but I've had some bad falls and things like that. But, you know, I was wondering, that was one of the questions I had. So,
yeah, for multiple sclerosis, they have, it's called the listing of impairments, and that's where Social Security has written up all the things that if your symptoms are this bad, then you win. But I have not met anybody whose symptoms were that bad on all of the different things. They have they have those standards or targets, I guess, for each of the, like, visual, cognitive, gait and station, all of those things. So those are listed in the book. You can read about them and how to approach each one. So it's a combination of your physical and your cognitive challenges that are going to win your awards.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
The next question is a follow-up question from the line of Izzy in Cleveland. Your line is now open.
Izzy?
Yes. If I applied and it was a telephone conference and they didn't ask really anything,
exactly.
They didn't really ask too many questions about the MS. It was more just statistical questions like name, social security number, birthday.
That's right.
So why didn't they, and then at the end, like toward the end when it seemed like she was going to hang up, I said, you know, you didn't really ask me anything about my disability. And she said, I just asked you what was in the computer. So then she told
exactly.
me, well, you have 2 minutes, but I have another call. You know, like I have another
right.
interview.
I'm glad you gave me the opportunity to address this. The online application and the telephone operator is going to ask the very same questions that are online. And the online questions do not ask neither the application nor the disability report ask anything about your disability. So it is up to you to give that information in the function report and in supplementary things that you prepare. And in the SSDI Tutor book, there is a list of things that you can do that you need to submit to them. In other words, you need to give them answers to questions they didn't ask. So a lot of that is already written down for you and some things that you can do to give them. And you can give them as much information as you want. And they need a lot of information, like I said, they didn't ask for.
Mm-hmm. So she gave me about 2 minutes, and I quickly just mentioned some of the main things that bother me every single day. And I asked her if she was going to send me a copy of the application, and she said yes. And I just got the copy like a day or two ago, and it didn't mention anything.
Okay, here's what you do. Write down everything you want them to know, and if you haven't already, you will get assigned a disability examiner, and you'll have that person's contact information. Send all that information to the to your disability examiner. You'll probably be requested for a function report or some other report. So send in all the information you want to tell them along with what they asked for. So make sure they get that information.
They're going to request me to send in a function report?
Most likely. If you have just applied over the telephone, if it's only been like a few days, I would guess that within a week or two, you will get a request for a work history report or a function report or both of them or maybe even some others.
Well, they did ask me some questions about, like, how many hours per day did you work, how many days per week, whatever. They asked some questions
You'll have to be, the work history report is about all the jobs you've had in the last 15 years.
Yeah, they did ask me some questions about my job.
Well, regardless of what they ask you, you write down what you want them to know and send it with whatever they ask for.
Because I tried to get off the website some of those forms, like the function report, I think it was called.
Yeah.
And I couldn't print that, and my husband went to the library and printed some of it. So the papers that he brought home, I tried to fill some of them out. But, you know,
I'll tell you what.
My writing is not that great anymore. I scribbled things here and there. I don't know if they could read too much of it.
Well, that will give them some insight, too. I'll tell you what. If you don't find the things that you need in the SSDI Tutor, you'll have my name, my number, and my contact information. So contact me, and I will help you personally. Okay?
Okay. You mean you're going to send this information to everybody on the call tonight?
Yes. Piper Reynolds with the National MS Society Greater Northwest Chapter is going to be taking care of that tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for your question. It's really frustrating.
Okay, thank you.
You're not the only person that affects.
No, I know. I thought this would be helpful for everybody.
Yeah.
There are no more questions from the phone line at this time.
Okay. Thanks a lot. I guess we're done.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes the conference call for today. We appreciate your participation and ask that you please disconnect your line.
Thanks, Felix. Bye.